is America with Rich Valdez, powered by PolitiWeek.com.
And Rich Valdez is with us, former Christie administration official.
You work for Chris Christie, you've been in politics, done a lot of public service stuff.
Rich Valdez, columnist now with the Washington Times.
This is America.
Richie V, you're on the air with the nation.
The nation.
This is America. With your host, Rich Valdez.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, Valdez with an S, at Rich Valdez on all of the social media, 17 miles away from Madison Square Garden, New York City. And I want to get into a couple of things. I want to talk about this special counsel report. That was the big news on Capitol Hill today. Then I want to talk about a little Peso Pluma. If you haven't heard of Peso Pluma, I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's on the cover of Rolling Stone right now. And he's one of the, saying he's like the biggest artist streaming right now. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And I got a couple other things about happiness and joy, these studies that have come out. And finally, just other social stuff that I want to talk about. But let's start with this stuff that happened. So this guy, special counsel, he is the special counsel, as his title suggests, that was in charge of investigating the classified documents scandal plaguing Joe Biden. Now, some of you are listening thinking, but what do you mean, Rich? I thought it was a classified document scandal that was plaguing Donald Trump. Well, that's happening too, but it's a little different, right? Because there's a lot of differentiating factors here. Number one, only one person has the authority to declassify documents without checking with anyone. That would be the President of the United States. And Joe Biden has that authority now, but he didn't have it when he took the documents and ran, right? So very, very eye-opening things happened today. And I think it's important to know that the special counsel, Robert Hur, he basically was he was getting grilled by the Senate Judiciary Committee trying to find out exactly what did you find out and why did you discover that these rules were broken, I'm going to say, but you decided not to charge the president with any crimes. And I think there's a multitude of reasons why they would not have charged a sitting president. But one of the interesting reasons that the special counsel cites is his age, right? And we talked about this weeks ago when it happened. But I just want to reiterate it because now he's in front of Congress today and he was there for 6 hours getting grilled by the House Judiciary Committee. I think I said Senate Judiciary Committee before, so forgive me if I did. But Robert Hur, he's there and he's having this back and forth with a number of people. And I want you to hear his opening statement. Because he feels that it's his final assessment in the report is regarding the relevance of the president's memory. And he says that it was necessary to do that. It was accurate and fair to make those statements. Listen to this.
There has been a lot of attention paid to language in the report about the president's memory. So let me say a few words about that. My task was to determine whether the president retained or disclosed national defense information willfully. That means knowingly and with the intent to do something the law forbids. I could not make that determination without assessing the president's state of mind. For that reason, I had to consider the president's memory and overall mental state and how a jury likely would perceive his memory and mental state in a criminal trial. These are the types of issues that prosecutors analyze every day. And because these issues were important to my ultimate decision, I had to include a discussion of them in my report to the Attorney General. The evidence and the president himself put his memory squarely at issue. We interviewed the president and asked him about his recorded statement. Quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. He told us that he didn't remember saying that to his ghostwriter. He also said he didn't remember finding any classified material in his home after his vice presidency. And he didn't remember anything about how classified documents about Afghanistan made their way into his garage. My assessment in the report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair. Most importantly, what I wrote is what I believe the evidence shows and what I expect jurors would perceive and believe. I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president unfairly. I explained to the Attorney General my decision and the reasons for it. That's what I was required to do.
That, again, is Robert Hur. He's the special counsel who was in charge of investigating President Biden and putting this report together. And he finds that Biden's memory was questionable to the point that it would not have swayed, persuaded a jury, meaning he didn't think that a charge would stick because Biden is perceived to be old and that a failing memory is favorable. But some of the big questions here, right, the huge takeaways from this are that Biden forgets when his son died. Now, you know, I don't wish this on anybody, but Biden had a daughter die, then he had a son die. And I can't imagine that this becomes any easier at any point, right? How do you not forget the moment that happened? Now, I understand he's had these brain aneurysms and open cranial surgery. I get it. I'm not a doctor, but I think most people look at Biden and think there's something wrong there, right? So it's okay for him to be president, but it's not okay for him to take the stand. He would not have been credible otherwise, right? So this is the testimony we're getting from Robert Herr. And, you know, he's trying to push back on these claims saying that the Republicans are exaggerating what he said about the president's state of mind and that he was alluding to the intent to criminally violate the rules, right, or to willfully do something unlawful. However you want to slice this, we also have to look at the entirety of the situation, right? We see President Biden on a daily basis. Now, if we skip ahead a little bit, and hopefully these audio clips are ready, but we've got another clip that I want you to listen to where Robert Herr says that the White House got the report and they wanted to weigh in with their version of the report. And they requested certain edits to be made to the report. So imagine that. An independent counsel, and again, this is a special counsel, not an independent counsel, but the idea is that this is an independent counsel that is going to report to the attorney general, but that's not directly, you know, like dotted line, not directly going to the attorney general, somebody that has independence to investigate the president of the United States, and that this person is going to then change. How independent are you if you submit your report and they say, look, I want to see a draft, and if I don't like it, I want you to change it? Imagine if you could do that when a cop writes you a ticket and go, listen, let me see the ticket. No, no, no. I was not doing 55 and a 25. No, I might have been doing 27, but I wasn't doing, to be honest, officer, right? Just imagine you have that ability to say, no, I'm going to request the following edits on the summons you give me, officer, because I just don't appreciate that. And again, I'm making a simple thing like a traffic infraction. This is a big thing that is literally being scrutinized under the Espionage Act. Crazy. Listen to this.
And did the White House get the report before the report was made public?
We did provide a draft of the report to the White House counsel's office and members of the president's personal counsel team for their review.
No, I understand. And did the White House then, once they got the report before it went public, did the White House try to weigh in with your investigation on elements of that report and, frankly, get the report changed?
They did request certain edits and changes to the draft report.
So they did request certain changes to the draft report. Look at that. Now, the big deal, the big difference here is, again, as president of the United States, not because you're Trump, but because you're president, you can take a file folder with you outside of your home, bring it to your other home. So you can take it from the White House to, let's say, Mar-a-Lago or anywhere else you go, Bedminster. And again, under the law, because there's only one person that is in effect elected to be the entirety of the executive branch, right? We don't elect any other member of the executive branch, but for one, the president of the United States. So it's understood that as you've heard in the Supreme Court case with the Colorado decision, that the reason why Trump is able to run and he's not an insurrectionist, A, because he was never charged and any of that stuff. I don't want to convolute the story here, but I do want to make it clear that it's that he's not an officer of the United States because he's an entire branch, right? The president serves as the entire branch known as the executive branch. And with that authority has the ability to declassify instantly. So moving ahead, we have a senator who then becomes vice president Biden, who leaves the vice presidency and does not have any statutory authority to remove classified documents, and did so knowing that he was wrong. And a special counsel even underscores this, saying that they took this information knowing that they shouldn't have had it and that there was a particular motivation for it. Now, Robert Hur was at this hearing today, and Biden claims that the motivation here was because he was writing a book and he got paid $8 million to write this book. And that was the motivation. And he was giving a ghostwriter that was writing the book with him some of the audio recordings and other classified information as part of the book. That sounds pretty crazy to me, right? You're not allowed to possess these documents, let alone have some other guy write about them in a book. But all of that being said, they kept saying, well, the reason we had to go raid Trump and Mar-a-Lago and do it the way we did, clandestine and, you know, like a raid, was because he might try to destroy this classified information so that he could say he never had it. Now, they've never been able to prove that Trump did this in any way. It just never happened. He was never charged with any destruction of anything. Now, that would fall under obstruction, and they'll have to prove that in court, but that didn't happen. But Mr. Hur did find evidence that the documents were going to be destroyed. In fact, they were deleted, and they were in the recycle bin of the computer when Mr. Hur conducted the investigation. Listen to this one.
Because here's the scary part. Page 200. I said this earlier in my opening statement. Page 200. Joe Biden, this is a quote, Joe Biden risked serious damage to America's national security when he shared information with his ghostwriter. Shared it with his ghostwriter, the guy who was helping Joe Biden get $8 million. And oh, by the way, Mr. Hur, what did that ghostwriter do with the information Joe Biden shared with him on his laptop? What did he do after you were named special counsel?
Chairman, if you're referring to the audio recordings that Mr. Zwanitzer created of his conversations with
exactly what I'm referring to.
He slid, if I remember correctly, he slid those files into his recycle bin on his computer.
Tried to destroy the evidence, didn't he?
Correct.
There you have it. Special counsel Robert Hur is telling the American people under oath in this hearing today that Joe Biden's ghostwriter tried to destroy any evidence of having these audio files, which were classified information, on his computer. And that was confirmed when Mr. Jordan just asked him. He tried to destroy the evidence, didn't he? Mr. Hur responds, correct. You just heard him say it. This is way more than anything that's even remotely happened with Trump. And this is not just because I want to defend Trump. This is because this is so wrong. There's an incredible double standard here. Now, look, I know I'm taking my time with this and I'm going a little bit over time, but I wanted to make sure we spelled this out because, you know, oftentimes you'll listen to the radio, you'll listen to the television, and there just isn't enough minutes in every segment for you to break this stuff down and to really hear everything you got to hear. But I want to give that to you. Robert Hur is at this hearing, and he now admits that Biden was lying when he insisted that he did not share classified information with the ghostwriter. And he basically says, yes, the report shows that what Mr. Biden said is inconsistent with the truth. Listen to this.
February 8th, the White House. Question, Mr. President, why did you share classified information with your ghostwriter? The president, I did not share classified information. I did not share it. I guarantee I did not. That's not true, is it, Mr. Hur?
That is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence in my report.
Yes, yeah, so it's a lie. It's just what regular people would say, right? Yeah, all right. So the next one. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
Another lie, people might say, right? Because what you put in your report was among the places Mr. Biden's lawyers found classified documents in the garage was a damaged open box.
Now, again, that is the exchange between Congressman Matt Gaetz and Robert Hur, the special counsel. Now, I'm going to wrap this up in a moment, but this is critically important. He asks him, that's what regular people would call a lie. Mr. Hur smiles and says, yeah, like you got me. You cornered me. I'm trying to be as professional and as objective as I can be, but I got to call a spade here. Biden lied. It's in the report. It's part of his testimony. Now, this is the last clip I'm going to play for you. This is where now Pramila Jayapal, she gets very, very belligerent. She tries to make the accusation that Biden has now been exonerated because he wasn't charged. And what's interesting is Mr. Hur says, I did not exonerate him. That's not his position, right? His position was to investigate and charge, and they chose not to charge because of the reasons he cited. Not that they didn't, there wasn't lies and there wasn't criminality. No, it was because he didn't think there could be a conviction. And I understand that. I think they still should have tried. But whatever the case may be, I want you to listen to this exchange and how she just talks right over him and doesn't give him a shot.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden. For every document you discussed in your report, you found insufficient evidence that the president violated any laws about possession or retention of classified materials. The primary law that you analyzed for potential prosecution was part of the Espionage Act, 18 U.S.C. 793E, which criminalizes willful retention or disclosure of national defense information. Is that correct?
Congresswoman, that is one statute that we analyzed. I need to go back and make sure that I take note of a word that you used, exoneration. That
Mr.
is not a word
Hur,
that
I'm going to continue with my questions.
That's not part of my task as
I'm going to continue with my questions. I know that,
that
the term
that I ultimately reached I know that whether the term, sufficient evidence existed such that the likely
you
outcome
you exonerated
a conviction.
I know that I did the not term willful
that word
retention
does not appear in the report,
has a Mr. Hur, it's my time. Thank you.
I did not exonerate him. That word has not appeared in the report, Congresswoman. That's what he said. She says, Mr. Hur, it's my time. Thank you. Now, listen, they're accusing Mr. Hur now of trying to become a judge or trying to get a better job once Trump gets in. Of course, they're going to sling all sorts of mud at this guy. The bottom line here is this report is damning. And if they allow you to read it with an objective mind and hear it, what he's basically saying is his task was to figure out, can we charge this guy with a crime? And that's going to stick. And he felt that they could not make it stick, not because it didn't happen, but because it has to be so egregious to bring a charge. And it goes against the Office of Legal Counsel to charge any sitting president, right? There's no indictments of sitting presidents. That's a kind of a tradition that they have. So, yes, the president is above the law, according to the Office of Legal Counsel. Now, I'm probably not going to revisit this on this episode, but just to give you a little bit of a taste of what was going on. And how much of what Biden has done has been documented as being unlawful. And he still gets away with it. Talk about a two-tiered system of justice. Anyway, straight ahead, we're going to continue our conversation. Lots to discuss. Don't go anywhere. I'm Rich Valdez.
This is America. This is America.
He's brown, he's bald, and he's breaking it down.
Oh, he's so handsome. What's his name?
Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back. So I wanted to talk about something a little bit different here. And it was about inflation is back and it's higher than it was last time. Yep. Surprise, surprise. I know that doesn't surprise people, but it rose 0.4 points in February. And from last year to now, it's up 3.2%. And this is a point that I made when I was on Newsmax TV this weekend, this past weekend, and giving some reaction to the State of the Union, which happened last week. And it was interesting that Biden, one of his, what he thought was an applause line, he comes out swinging, saying, listen, We've got the lowest inflation in the world, in the developed world, and it's the lowest we've had in 50 years. Now, I don't know where he gets this 50 years part. It might be the lowest in the developed world because, obviously, we don't include housing and energy costs in the calculation that we use conveniently for him. And that's where most people are seeing it, right? But outside of that, he says we've gotten this down to 3%. Now, all I could say is this. When you come into office and you're running against the guy who was in office right before you, and that guy left office with inflation at 1.25%, I think 1.25%. Let's just call it 1.5 to be on the super safe side. 1.5%. For you to say that that was Trump's number, and for you to say after 3 years in office that you're so great and Bidenomics is fantastic that you've doubled the number from 1.5 to 3%, which we all know is not, it's only part of the story. That's the bottom line part of the story. The rest of the story is that, yeah, for the last 3 years, inflation's been at 9, 10, 11, 12, 14%. Now it's 3, according to their calculation. Isn't that funny? That he thinks that this is something to brag about. It's somehow something that we should be, you know, getting up and clapping for. I think it's absolute insanity that he increased inflation by 100% from his predecessor. And he thinks that this is the best thing ever. I got to tell you, people are not as dumb as Biden presumes. That's all I could say. People turn a blind eye to a lot of things because, you know, they want to go along. They want to get along. They want to take a vacation. They want to go to dinner. They want to have a good time. They don't want to get involved in the day-to-day minutia of, you know, holding politicians accountable. They do it every 4 years on election day, and yeah, that's it. But I got to tell you, this is not a good position for Biden to be in. It's not a good look in any way. I mean, it's just not. And again, that's based on the Consumer Price Index, which came out today, yesterday. It's the measure of goods and services, and it's up. Like I said, it is up. The monthly measure was in line with expectations, while the year-long or 12-month reading was slightly higher. The core CPI rose 0.4%. So again, 0.4%. It was up 3.8% on the year. So that's not good either. Both were 0.1% higher than their forecast. That's even worse, right? So you're forecasting this and you come in 0.1% higher. You know, you want to come in lower and look like a hero. Anyway. A 2.3% increase in energy costs helped boost the headline inflation number. Food costs were flat on the month over month, and shelter climbed another 0.4%. So just imagine that. You've got the cost of food and shelter, and they just keep going up and up and up. Where does that leave Americans? Not in a great place, that's for sure. Now, I also saw the gas prices are up. Listen, they go down, they go up. All I can tell you is this stuff is not sustainable. The whole house of cards comes tumbling down eventually if we keep playing this game where people can't build wealth. You have to be able to build wealth. You can't have everybody living paycheck to paycheck, people looking for jobs that don't exist. It's just not going to work. It's a recipe for disaster. You have to unleash the economy, not stifle the economy with regulation and left-leaning policies. Anyway, so that was that piece on the economy that I wanted to do and discuss with you. There was also a piece on fast food and the brain that I wanted to talk about. I might get to that in the next segment. So keep it locked right there. Make sure you check me out on the website, richvaldez.com, richvaldez.com. And also, if you're listening to the podcast and you're like, oh, I'm glad you're back because we did take a hiatus for a little bit, and I apologize for that, but, you know, it was necessary at the time just to get all the moving parts together with the studio transitions and whatnot. But ultimately, I'm grateful, super grateful to this audience for always tuning in, for always subscribing, for sharing and texting these shows. And when they hear something, they, you know, they send it to their loved ones. It's because of you and all of the great, amazing reviews. If you've checked out the reviews for this show, I think you were 4.9 out of 5 stars on Apple Podcast, and just some amazing reviews and a couple of critics. There's always a few critics, but for the most part, most people really enjoy this program, and I credit you for that, right? There's no show without a listener, and I'm super grateful to you guys for that.
This is America.
The 45th President Donald Trump thinks it's an honor to speak with Rich Valdez.
Oh, very good, Mr. Co-screener.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor. Thanks, Rich.
The honor is all yours. Conservative talk with a dash of sofrito. Now, here's Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back. Now, there's a few things I want to get into here, and you just got to bear with me a little bit. YouTube is now thriving. It is replacing cable television. YouTube TV, it's called. And I haven't tried it out just because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of YouTube. I'm more of a Rumble guy. But there was a story that I wanted to get to. And I guess there's two things left that I want to talk about. I want to tie in what's happening with violence in America. But before I get into that, I want to talk about what you've probably seen all over your Instagram or whatever social media feed you have. And again, I know everybody's algorithm is different. You know, some people see jokes all day, which I'd love to see. I love seeing jokes. What I end up seeing is typically, news stuff. And one of the things I saw here was, it was a pictorial in the New York Post of videos of spring breakers brawling all over different beaches in the South. And this is a trend, and this is why Governor DeSantis was cracking down on this. And again, this is not any one particular racial group, I want to add, right? I mean, I'm looking at a picture here. It's a bunch of drunk white boys. There's some where it's a bunch of African-American women. There's others where it's African-American men. I mean, people are drunk and they act up. And I think the vibe has just become more violent in recent times, where there's more fighting and there's more of that going on. But things are increasingly more violent. Then there was another video. This is not a spring break per se video. This is kids that were out of school, maybe for spring break, but in Missouri. And there's a girl who got into a bunch of girls get into a fight, but this one girl, very vicious. This fight they're having quickly goes from like a hair-pulling match between two girls. One girl looks like she's white or Hispanic. The other girl, African-American. And they're going at it. And then all of a sudden, she knocks her down. And, you know, you would think like the rules of boxing, standing 10 count, you know, just hold on. No, she just keeps going. And she's on top of her, and she's one punch after the next. And then she grabs the girl by her ears and starts banging and smashing her head into the concrete sidewalk. And again, this is one teenage girl versus another, but very strong girl. And this girl is lifeless. She's literally like at one point convulsing, and in the next scene, she's lifeless. And she just keeps going. Well, the Attorney General of Missouri has arrested this girl who committed this crime, and he is trying to get her charged as an adult. Now, I have to say, if you're 15 years old, 14 years old, 13, 12, and you don't think that you can kill someone by smashing their head very violently into a concrete floor, this is well beyond a street fight, right? To me, this is a death sentence. I mean, what do you think is going to come of that? The girl wasn't fighting back for a good, I don't know, for a good few minutes, or at least a good 30 seconds. She was out. She was out cold from the first blow to the head. Just remarkable, honestly. The whole thing was remarkable. Anyway, it leads me to believe that we've got a problem with the value of life. And I talked about this a little bit last week with those eight kids that killed that 20-year-old girl who was a mom. Every week we see more and more violent crime amongst young people. And all I could say is, to me, it seems we're really, really, really reaching a boiling point, a tipping point, where we just don't value life. And the reason we do that is because we've gotten further and further away from what we attach our morality to. Some people are it's no issue for them to be very moral people. They believe that killing is wrong. They believe that stealing is wrong. They believe in helping their fellow man. And they could be atheists. They could care less about God. However, they're few and far between, these wonderful people, these godless, wonderful folks. And they're out there. I'm not questioning them. I know many. But they're in the minority. The majority of people that live by a moral code are typically somehow aligned to a faith, because it's God that's given us these universal truths that we know as Ten Commandments. And we've gotten so far away from it that we don't care about our country, we don't care about our neighbor, we oftentimes don't care about ourselves. And that's problematic, because when you don't care about yourself, you're not going to care about the person next to you. And that's when we have these problems. And to that I say, I'm super happy that there is a study that shows that happiness can be learned. Yep. In the United Kingdom, research is showing that happiness can be obtained. You can learn about it in school, even, they're saying. Now, the University of Bristol's Science and Happiness course, which launched in 2018, is helping to answer this question. And it's not your typical college class. The innovative course kind of features different things. There's no tests. There's no classwork. Instead, it focuses on teaching students that peer-reviewed studies in psychology and neuroscience literally suggest that people can be happy by choice. Now, this is, I've heard this before, but now we have research. Now, the research team behind this says that they've released a new study reporting that it really is possible to learn how to be happy. And I love this because I want to learn how to be happier. I can be a grump. And I'm not a grump all the time, but I don't want to be a grump. Anyway, thanks to their course, these researchers now established that teaching students about the latest scientific studies focusing on happiness results in a notable improvement in their well-being. And they did this during a particular project. They took things further. Now their work is showing that there are increases in well-being amongst enrolled students in that particular course. And unless these individuals keep up with the evidence-informed habits that they're taught during the course, it wears off. So apparently, if you're in the happy course and you stay in the happy course, you stay happier. You remain a happy person. And I think that's fascinating, honestly. So they do things like teaching people to stay focused on gratitude, exercising, doing meditation, and journaling. And they say doing this over the long haul will help you to be happier. They said it's literally like going to the gym. And you can't expect to do one class and be fit forever at the gym. Same way here, you can't expect to do one thing and have it take effect immediately. Otherwise, the improvements are temporary, so you have to keep at it. And I thought that was a very interesting thing, this lesson in happiness. So happiness education works. I'll share this on social media so you could read the rest of the study yourself. But ultimately, it says things like being with friends, being grateful for your friends, meditating, stuff that I think we've probably all read articles on this in the past, but now there's actual, scientifically backed, peer-reviewed information suggesting that being a decent person is a good thing. Anyway, straight ahead, I want to talk about Peso Pluma. He's a Mexican artist. If you've never heard of him, he's blowing things up. We're going to talk about him straight ahead. Don't go anywhere.
This is America. This is America. He's making podcasting great again. This is America with Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back. Rich Valdez, at Rich Valdez on all of the social media. That's Valdez with an S, by the way. And I want to thank you for subscribing to the podcast, sharing the podcast, giving us a 5-star review and leaving a comment. All of that stuff is always wonderful. Thank you for doing that. And you guys know I'm a fan. I grew up with 90s hip hop. And of course, you know, the classics that my mom was listening to, like, you know, Lionel Richie and Diana Ross, My First Love, you know, all that stuff. But there was a lot of really good hip hop music in that era. And again, good music, not necessarily stuff I agreed with, but it was very, very socially conscious, very focused on political issues, social issues of the day. And today music is very different. It's always been art imitating life. So the art form imitates the life that one is in. And during the 80s in New York City, there was a crack epidemic. So people were losing their friends and family. And it was like, you know, it's time to take things back. You know, let's get control over ourselves again. I think today it's more like let's continue losing control and let's keep the party going. And there's an artist, a Mexican artist. His name is Peso Pluma. And what's interesting here, he's on the, at least, I don't know if it's the cover of Rolling Stone, but there's a big feature article on the digital version here. And it says Peso Pluma breaks all the barriers. And very, very interesting piece. I looked at it earlier in the day, and it said that he was the number one global streaming artist, I guess, since the time they published that. Maybe he, you know, it was a short-lived time frame. But the point that I'm making is interesting because this guy, he's added like a new flavor of, I don't know, trap, hip-hop to rancheros, right? He plays this Mexican music. He's Mexican. And it's a very interesting sound. Listen.
Dicen que soy mamón, también que soy culero. No les pongo atención y muy poco les creo. No sufro de conciencia, yo cuido mi cuerpo.
Like so much of music that we hear these days in the urban genre, this Mexican music is still, it's very edgy. It's very edgy. It pushes the limits of norms with being provocative, right? That's kind of how the music is. And it's very interesting, but the piece is interesting, and I'm just going to share a little bit of it because, again, I like to, hopefully you've never heard of this and you're learning something new, or B, you're a big fan of Peso Plumas and you're like, hey, how cool that we're talking about that on This Is America with Rich Valdez. Either way, my hope is that you'll expand your thinking and consider some new sounds, right? I used to do some weekend radio in New York City, and Sundays with Sinatra was the show that followed mine. And Cousin Brucey used to have an oldies show, and that was really cool. Actually, my show used to open up for Cousin Brucey. Cousin Brucey, a radio legend. And I remember his first show coming back. He left Sirius Radio and went back to WABC, where he started out like 55 years earlier, 60 years earlier. And I was his very first show. I was the lead into that show. And I was just like, I'm so cool. And let me tell you, just on an aside before we get into Peso Pluma, Cousin Brucey, what an amazing broadcaster. The guy brings his own mic. He's got this amazing, he uses actually like a, not a a talk mic. He uses a singing mic in this beautiful cradle, and you'd think you're in a recording studio. Really, really amazing broadcaster. The guy's in his 80s and sounds just as good as he did 60 years ago. So anyway, this guy, Peso Pluma, some have rumored that his success is owed to the Sinaloa cartel backing him financially. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't make that statement on the air or on digital here. But I can say the guy is blowing up. He's got a song with all the hottest artists, and he's out there. And part of the article talks about what it's like, and they're saying, you know, the studio feels like a tropical frat house packed with polite, laid-back guys who might pass for regular 20-somethings, except that many of them are casually wearing diamond-tripped watches and gold chains heavy enough to cause neck injuries. Most are Peso Pluma's bandmates, but the young, seasoned musicians who play bass and double bass and guitar and the trombone, they're all there, and they define this particular sound because he's not a digital guy. He's actually a live music kind of guy. He brings the band with him. Like I said, he brings that ranchero vibe. So it's a very, very unique sound, and it's catching on, and good for him. It's very, very original. The guy, there's no lack of talent here, right? This guy definitely is doing his thing. But I just thought it was interesting that he's really moving up, and it's no surprise to me. But number three on the Billboard 200 chart in April, the highest charting regional Mexican album ever, is his latest. So kudos to Peso Pluma. More on him next time. I think we talked about Bad Bunny a little bit last time and how he's, you know, how reggaeton overall has become the global sound of pop. I wish there was more time in this show where I could get into that a little bit more, but rule number one in show business, always leave them wanting more. So hopefully you enjoyed this show. I didn't help put you to sleep, and you can't wait to hit the subscribe button and join us again for next week's installment. And if you want, join me live on the radio Monday through Friday, 10 o'clock at night to 1 in the morning, and we take calls, and it's a longer show with lots more topics. Anyway, hasta la próxima. Until the next time, America, you have to stand for something, because if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. And the only thing necessary for evil to triumph, well, that's for you to sit there and do nothing. So do something, because America needs you now more than she's ever needed you before. I'm Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.